So we are holding four lines from the bottom of your Dalet Omid Beis. We were talking about yesterday a case where Reuven sends money with Shimon, a shliach, to give to Levi as a present. We find that Levi has died. What do we do with it? So we had a multi way machlokas among in a brisa. What we do with it? We had Rab Nosson and Rab Yaakov saying that you give it back to Reuven. We had Yesh Omrim said that you give it to Levi's heirs. We had mitzvah l'kayim. We had in the name of Rab Meir mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, that there is a mitzvah to fulfill what the person said because now he's dead and therefore you do give it to Levi or his heirs. After all, we had the Chacham said yachloiku because they're not sure. We said one thing. First, we said that it may depend on the question that we were discussing before of holach kizchi dami or not. When you say bring this money to somebody, is that the equivalent of that you're being mezake that the shliach is acquiring it on behalf of the other person because zochem l'adam shalei b'fanav, and in that case, then it already belongs to him and it would go to him or his heirs, as opposed to if we say holach lav kizchi, then maybe we would say that it returns to the original person. So we ended up saying that no, not necessarily. We would be talking about the case of the Braisa would be involving a Shchiv Mera. Now, we talk about throughout Shas the idea that Divrei Shchiv Mera K'suvim B'chim Esurin Domu, that when a Shchiv Mera, a person on his deathbed, says something, whatever he says is considered like written and given over. In other words, it already takes effect as soon as he says it. However, as we're going to see now, not everybody agrees to that. So therefore, the machlokas and the braisa before may also depend on that point. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara, let's go back one line, actually. So loy, the body kula amaloi pligi, when it comes to a healthy person who said that I'm going to give this matana, then everybody, then there'd be no disagreement. Everybody would agree, holach lav kischi, which is in fact the halacha, and therefore that he can take it back, that he can tell that in particular, well, even if Levi hasn't died yet, he can tell Shimon, you know what, I changed my mind, bring it back to me. But in any case, certainly if Levi has died, then we wouldn't say that we give it to his Yoshim. So rather, we would be talking about the case where Reuven at the time was a shchivra or plugged to Rabbi Lozer Rabbanon Kanifli. So therefore, the machlokas in the previous braisa is based on the machlokas of Rabbi Lozer and the Chachamim. Tosfos discusses over here at some length, of many times in Shas, when you have Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Eliezer are very easily confused. But Tosfos points out later that the Gemara is going to now quote a Mishnah. Now it's not going to quote the whole Mishnah, only part of it. And further on in it, you have Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua. So therefore, obviously, in the part that we're going to quote over here, it must be Rabbi Lozer. Anyway, the Tanan. So we learn in a Mishnah. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra. Hamachkalik nechosav al piv. If a person is giving out his nechosim based on his say, in other words, he's not just leaving it that after he dies, it's going to be divided according to the normal rules of Yerusha, with his sons each getting a portion, the Bechor getting a double portion, etc. He's specifically giving out shares to more or less to various individual children according to what he wants. So Rabbi Lozer Omer, Echad Bori ve'Echad Mesukan. So Rabbi Lozer says, doesn't matter whether the guy at the time is healthy or whether he's or whether he's dangerously ill, even if he's a shchiv mera. Then, no, just saying it is not enough. That particular son or whoever should be coining it. So Rabbi Lozer says, Nechosim sheyesh lehen achrayus, and Nechosim that have achrayus, which is the Gemara's terminology for land. They're called nechosim sheyesh lehen achrayus because we know all over Shas when Reuven borrows money from Shimon, then all of Reuven's real estate becomes meshubad to that, and eventually Shimon can collect from that. For that reason, then Shimon has a certain guarantee that eventually, if Reuven defaults on the debt, it'll be able to collect from those karkois, which he wouldn't be able to necessarily from Metalplin. So therefore, karka, land, is called Nechosim Sheyesh Lehen Achrayus. There is also a point. There was another kind of achrayus that the Gemara mentions in a number of places in Shas, which is that when you sell something to somebody, especially particularly when you sell land, there's usually an achrayus clause in there saying essentially if something happens to this property that has to do with me, for example, if one of the people that I owe money to ends up taking it away from you, then I will compensate you for that. But then when we call land the chosim shiyesh land achrayus, primarily we're focusing on the fact that there is achrayus in them in the sense that you can use them, that they're normally available as security for a loan. Anyway, so those, Rabbi Elazar says, then you have only you need one of the normal ways of kinyan, nikkan kesef uvashtar of a chazaka. You would have to be kind of them by paying money or by writing a shtar or by chazaka. In other words, Rabbi Elazar is saying just the fact that the father, the shchiv mara, said that, even though he was a shchiv mara, said that this son is going to get this particular plot of land, that's not enough. The son actually makes some kind of kinyan on it in order to actually acquire it. And Rabbi Elazar continues, nechosim that do not have achrayus, namely metautlin, ein niknin elam meshicha. Those are going to be acquired only through meshicha, or again, one of the other possible ways of making a kinyan. In other words, in short, he's saying that the words of the shchiv mara themselves have not created the kinyan, and therefore kinyan still has to be made. So we see that Rabbi Elazar does not hold divrei shchiv mara k'ksuvin v'chim esuvin gamu. Whereas the Chum disagree, and they say both the karka and the metaltlin, they can be acquired by the Yoshim just by him saying so, because yes, the words of a shchivra are considered kichsuvin b'chimisurin, as though they were written and given over, and therefore automatically with that itself there's a kinyan. So Omru Loi, so the Chum said to Rabbi Elazar, we'll bring you a proof. Maisa be'iman shal b'nei roichel. It happened once with the mother of b'nei roichel. Now roichel usually means a peddler. However, here in Bava Basra, which is where this Mishnah and this discussion comes from, the Rashbam explains over there that roichel was actually the name of their father. Anyway, so it happened with the children of mother of the children of Roichel. So Roichel himself, the pastor had passed away years earlier, but it doesn't matter, whatever. Anyway, their mother now, she was sick. She was a shchiv mara. But Omra, she said, Tinosi kvinosi livni. She said, my kvina should be given to my daughter. Rashi over here translates a kvina as a brooch or a pin, something that a clasp of some kind, a fancy jeweled clasp, which v'hi b'shnei mosa mona, it was worth 12 mona, which is quite a lot of money. Tosfos in Bava Basra over there points out that maybe that doesn't fit other places in the Gemara where we find the word kvina, and they bring an explanation from the Oruch that it means something like a shawl or a scarf. Whatever the case, it was some kind of fancy tachshit that was worth 12 mana, which is a lot of money. Now she's saying it should be given to my daughter. Usually, of course, a daughter doesn't yaushin when there are sons. But here, the mother had specifically said, as a shchiv mara, that the daughter should have this tachshit. Umesa, and then the mother died, v'kimu chacham mestvareha, and the chachamim upheld what she said and gave that tachshit and gave that piece of jewelry or shawl or whatever it is to the daughter. So we see, say, the Chachamim to Rabbi Elazar, that the words of a shchiv mara are a given, it's a kiksuvin b'chimisurin, and therefore no kinyan is necessary. Otherwise, how would it have been given to the daughter? There was no kinyan involved. It was just that she said so. Omalahem, so Rabbi Elazar answers them, b'nei roichel tikberem imam. The children of roichel, their mother ought to bury them. In other words, he's cursing them because Rashi explains, don't even bother mentioning that case in the Beis Medrash as a raya. These bnei roichel were reshoyim. The Gemara explains over there that we know there's an issue of kilaya kerem. You're not allowed to have vegetables or grain growing in your vineyard near your vines. They were allowing thorns to grow in their vineyards near their vines. Which is all, and Rabbi Elazar holds that such a thing is kilayim. The Mishnah mentions in Masechta Kilayim, since camels in particular eat those kinds of plants, then Rabbi Elazar considers them to be useful plants, and therefore it's also to have them in a vineyard. So he says this family were reshoyim, and therefore actually So Rashi just says, then we don't really care the specifics of what happened with them. We don't want to even bother mentioning the name of that family in the Beis Medrash because they were Shoyim, and you're not going to want to bring any proofs from them. The Rashbam and Baba Basri explains it a bit differently. He says that Rabbi Lazar is saying, I agree that the Chachamim allowed the daughter to get the piece of jewelry. But you know why? Because since the sons were such Rishoyim and they were keeping Kalaya Kerem, therefore the Chachamim took the so to speak illegally took that away from them and gave it to her, because apparently she wasn't involved in that particular Isser. So in other words, Rabbi Lazar would be saying, according to that, it's not that al pi adin it would be like that, but in this case, the Chachamim found a reason to penalize them. The Bach, by the way, and then Choshen Mishpat asks on that, I mean, isn't there's a mitzvah in the Torah that you're not allowed to discriminate in a din Torah against a Rosha. You're specifically not allowed to. The Torah says, lo sata mishpat av yon chaberivoy, you can't say, well, the guy is a Rosha, so I may as well discriminate against him and decide in favor of the other guy. You have to follow the halacha, whatever it is. So he says, in a case like this, where the Chachamim can use it as leverage against them to get them to stop doing the Aveira, then it would be allowed. Be that as it may, the point is that, so in any case, Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim then have this underlying machloikas of whether Divrei Shchiv Merah automatically take effect, or whether you still need a kinyan on the thing that's on the asset that's being given, just like with any other asset. Well, now Tanakama Rabbi Lazar. So now going back to the previous Braisa, the Tanakama had said that, again, going back to the case where Reuven had sent money with Shimon to give to Levi, and then Levi died. Now, again, we're talking about that Reuven is a Shchiv Merah. The Tanakama would hold like Rabbi Lazar. Divrei Shchiv Merah are not necessarily a given. They're not Kesuvim B'Chemesurin. Therefore, Levi has not acquired the money right away. And therefore, so the Tanakhama says, in this case, if Levi's dead, then you return it to Reuven, or to Reuven's estate, as the case may be. Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov, Nami, Rav Elazar. Now, Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov, who say that you would, give it to, so that was the first case, was where Reuven himself is still alive. So he said, Yachsu l'b'shalayach, you bring it back to Reuven, so that Tanakhama would be saying like Rav Elazar. Then you had, the Braisa had presented the possibility, what if meanwhile Levi has died? And then Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov say also you return it to Reuven's Yoshim. Same thing, they also hold Nami Rav Elazar, they also hold like Rav Elazar. And they say, the Afagav the Miss. So Afagav the Miss, again, they say, even though he's dead, Lo Yamrin and Mitzvah L'Kayim, Divrei HaMes, we don't say Mitzvah L'Kayim, Divrei HaMes. We don't say that forget about the matter of Shchiv Merah. Maybe there's a separate point that now that Reuven is dead, we want to honor his wishes. Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov says there's no requirement to do that. The Yesh Oimrim Kerabonon, on the other hand, the Yesh Oimrim in the earlier Braisa, who say that it would go to when Levi has died, then it goes to Levi's Yoshim, they would be holding Kerabonon. They would be holding like the Chachamim of the Mishnah in Bava Basra that we just quoted, that Divrei Shchiv Merah are given, and there's an automatic kinyan. So even if we don't say Holech Kischi, but the fact that the guy was a Shchiv Merah, that Reuven was a Shchiv Merah, when he said that, automatically that makes it that what he said goes, and therefore as soon as he said bring the money to Levi, then already it becomes Levi's without any further kinyan. So therefore the Yesh Omrim then are going according to that and saying that's why you give it to Levi's heirs if he died meanwhile. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Sha'omer Meshum Rameir, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, bringing in the name of Rabbi Rameir, would say basically Rabbi Lazar. He would say basically like Rabbi Lazar, we don't necessarily have to honor the word of a Shchiv Merah if he's still alive. Mihu Heifa the Miss, but if in between he died, Amrin and Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMes, then Rameir holds, as he holds in other places in Shas, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMes, that still there's a special mitzvah to fulfill what he said because he's died in between. And therefore, for that reason alone, even if to begin with, when he said, give this to Levi, we would hold like Rabbi Lazar that Levi has not necessarily acquired it yet. But now, since then, Reuven has died, then therefore that introduces a new factor, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMes, which Rameir holds of, and therefore you'd have to give it to Levi's heirs. And the last opinion, And the last opinion in the previous braisa was the Chacham say we'd have to divide it. We have to divide it between Levi's heirs and Reuven's heirs, because they have a suffix whether the divrei shchivin are in effect or not, and they have a suffix whether mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. So therefore, the kan omru shuda odif. So the Vakan Omru is one, is another opinion in the Braisa. We said Vakan Omru here, meaning in Bavel, they said Kol Masha Yitzah Shliach Yaseh. So they would hold, Shuda Odif. They would hold that the Shliach's discretion is the more important thing, rather than Yachloiku, where after all, then neither one is going to get the full amount that they were supposed to, because after all, in reality, it either belongs all to Reuven or it all belongs to Levi. So therefore, the Kan Omru opinion holds that we would we leave it up to the shliach to decide. Like we learned yesterday, Rashi would say that it means the shliach has to evaluate what would Reuven really have wanted, no matter what, this money should go to Levi, or was he just doing it? He was just saying that the money should go to Levi out of a certain sense of obligation, and if Levi's not available to get it, then he'd be happy to have it back, and the shliach has to decide accordingly. And Tosfos had learned that it doesn't even mean that; it means the shliach could decide however he wants, without even giving a rationale for it. And then the last thing in the braisa, Reb Shimon Anosi, Maisa, Osalash Menon, Reb Shimon Anosi, when he says there was actually a case where they passed him like the Chachamim and said that you return it to Reuven's heirs, that would be Maisa, Osalash Menon. He wants to tell us an actual practical case where they passed him like that. So again, if we understand the braisa that way, that it's all talking about where Reuven was a shchivmera, then it has nothing to do with the question of holich kizchi, because in the case of a shchivmera, that's not the factor that comes into play. You would say holich lav kizchi, just giving it to the shliach, is not the equivalent of being mezakeh to the other guy. But here we have with a shchivmera, we have the whole different set of considerations, whether divrei shchivmera k'ksuvin v'chim esurin, and whether mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Okay. The Gemara says, when we said before, Iboilu, Reb Shimon Anossi, by the way, when we mentioned before Reb Shimon Anossi in this Braisa, Nossi who, was he actually a Nossi? Or does it mean Reb Shimon saying in the name of the Nossi? And after all, I mean, historically, we know of only two Nassim who were named Reb Shimon. There was the son of Hillel who succeeded him. There was Reb Shimon, there was the first Reb Shimon Gamliel who died or was killed at the time of the Churban, and there was the second Reb Shimon Gamliel of Yavne, the father of Rebbe. So is this Reb Shimon one of them, or is it just mean Reb Shimon saying in the name of the Nasi? So the answer is Toshma, the Omer Reb Yosef, Halacha Reb Shimon HaNasi. Well, Reb Yosef says the Halacha is like Reb Shimon HaNasi. Now, Reb Yosef, being an Amora, should be clarifying further. A Braisa sometimes might say something elliptically, and we have to fill in the details ourselves. But an Amora, like Reb Yosef, is supposed to explain more clearly. So if he says Reb Shimon HaNasi, the Pashtus, that means that was his name. He was an actual Nasi. Well, the Adayin Tiboyloch, still, though, you'd have the question, Nasi who? Still, even Reb Yosef, does he mean he was an actual Nasi? Oidekam Mishmei de Nasi. Maybe not. Even so, you could still say that maybe he means that Reb Shimon is saying in the name of the Nasi. He just wanted to quote exactly the words of the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Teiku, we can't be sure about that. Okay. Gufa, so now let's analyze that a little more. Amar Reb Yosef, Halacha k'Reb Shimon HaNasi. The question is, how could we say the Halacha is like Reb Shimon HaNasi, who says that you return it to the Meshaleach, to Reuven, if we're saying that we're talking that the Braisa is talking about a shchivmera, v'akaymel on divrei shchivmera v'chichsovin v'chim esurin damu, don't we know as a fact it's an accepted halacha throughout Shas, not like Rabbi Lazar in the Mishnah before, but rather like a chachamim that divrei shchivmera v'chichsovin v'chim esurin, they're like they're written and given over. So therefore, as soon as Reuven the shchivmera says this money goes to Levi, automatically it becomes Levi, whether we say holach kizchi or not. So how can Rabbi Yosef be going against that? The answer is Rabbi Yosef Muki Lo B'Bari. Okay, Rabbi Yosef would say that the Braisa is talking about a Bari and not a Shchivmera. So in the case of a Bari, then the question is whether Holach Kizchi, and since Holach Lav Kizchi, then therefore the Halacha would be it returns to Reuven's Yoshin. So the Gemara asks V'Hala Yoshi M'Shaleach Kamar. What about though the Braisa had also said that Reb Shimon HaNasi had said that it goes back to the heirs of the Meshaleach, the Kaimel on Mitzvah, the Kaim Dirames. In other words, that Reb Shimon has to be talking about a case where Reuven himself already died by the time the Shliach came back. And we also know that the Halacha is like the mayor, that Mitzvah, the Kaim Dirames. So therefore, even if Reuven was a body at the time when he gave the gift, but now, since by the time it's returned, Reuven is dead, then we would say Mitzvah, the Kaim Dirames, and it ought to go to Levi's Yoshim. So how can Rabbi Yosef be saying that it goes back to Reuven? And the answer is Tony Yachsu l'Mashaleach. We would have to learn in Rabbi Shimon Hanasi's words, not Yachsu l'Yoshim Mashaleach, but rather Yachsu l'Mashaleach. It goes back to the Mashaleach, to Reuven himself, meaning we're not talking about where Reuven died. We're talking about where Reuven is still alive. And Rabbi Shimon is telling us, don't think that mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Oh, no, there's no mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames for you. Don't think that holich kizchi, or that don't think that holich kischi in the case of a body that we're talking about, rather realize that holich lav kischi, and therefore in an actual practical case, therefore they paskin like they paskin like the chachamim and like Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov in the earlier part of the Braisa, who says that you give it back to Reuven himself. But it's true, Rabbi Shimon Hanasi might well agree, and Rabbi Yosef would agree that if in between Reuven died, then you give it to Levi's, to Levi or to his Yerushim, not because the gift was effective the moment it was said, because it was a matnas bari, but rather because mitzvah l'kayim divramis. Okay, hadron alacha mevi kamo. There's by the way, the next parak also begins Hamevi Get, just like the first one, which is why this one is called Hamevi Kama. The second one is going to call the second one, even though at the tops of the page, even though at the tops of the pages we only have it's called Hamevi Get also, but we'll call it later on at the end of Tosfos, for example, it calls it Hamevi Sheni, the second parak that begins with that. But anyway, this one is called Hamevi Kama because the first one. Okay, so now we're going to get back to matters of Gittin. Now, maybe get Mimdinas Yam, if a person brings a get from a country outside Eretz Yisrael. Now, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta that the Chachamim made a takana that he has to be able to say, B'fanin nichta, B'fanin nechta, it was written and it was signed in my presence. And we learned at the beginning two reasons behind that. We had Rabba's reason, we had Rabba's reason and Rava's reason. Rabbi had said the problem is that people outside Eretz Yisrael, except we said in Bavel, are not generally familiar with the din that a get has to be written l'shma. So therefore, you have to be able to testify that it was written and signed in your presence, and therefore, in effect, what you're doing is you're testifying, therefore, that it was done, that when you say b'fanin nechtam, then you're going to ask him, was it written l'shma, and he'll be able to say yes. That was Rabba's reason. Rabba's reason was because people don't commonly travel between Chutz Laaretz and Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you're not going to find easily Edim to be Mekayim the Get, to be Mekayim the Shtar. So therefore, if the husband protests and says that this Get is forged or what have you, we're not going to easily be able to find Edim to validate the signatures, and therefore he says B'fanin Nechta, B'fanin Nechta, and the Chachamim consider that. The Chum consider that the equivalent of testifying on the signatures themselves are valid. And then we had gone through on Daf Beis, Daf Gimel, Daf Dalet. We had gone through a whole long discussion about the ins and outs of these different opinions and the nafkaminas between them and when one might apply and the other might not, etc. So now the Mishnah is saying that he brings the get from the Dinas Hayam. He says it was written in my presence, but it was not signed in my presence. Or he says it was signed in my presence, but it wasn't written in my presence. Or he says all of it was written in my presence, but only half of it was signed in my presence, meaning that only one of the Edim signed in front of me, or b'fanin nichtav chetzi, or b'fanin nechtam kolay, or the other way around, he says, only half of it was written in my presence, and then both Edim signed in my presence. So in all those cases, it would be possible because midrabanan, because you don't have and we're going to see in the Gemara as far as the case of the half, which half are we talking about? In any case, in all those cases, it's possible because you don't have the takana of the chachamim. The chacham said he has to say b'fanin nichtav or b'fanin nechtam, and he's not able to say that. We did, by the way, learn before on Daf Vav, we said that he doesn't, strictly speaking, need to actually be there in the room when they're doing it. It would be enough if he just hears the sound of the preparation of the parchment or the scratching of the quill on the parchment. But nevertheless, at least he was there. He may have been in another room, but he at least hears it being written. He was saying he wasn't even around at all for part of the writing of the get or for part of the signing of the get. And again, we'll see in the Gemara what the problem is when we say half of the get, which half are we talking about? Anyway. What about another example? Suppose that two people bring the get. Up until now, we've been talking about where only one person, where only one person is bringing the get. So, by the way, chetzia, of course, doesn't mean exactly half, it just means part of the get. Anyway, so now you have another case. Suppose that two people are bringing the get. So one of them says it was written in my presence, and the other one says it was signed in my presence. No, the shliach has to be able to say the shliach has to be able to say both of them. Here we only have one is saying one, and the other the other. The Rashi brings from the Gemara is going to explain. There's two possibilities. Which one of them is actually holding the get? If only one of them is holding the get, then he's the shliach. Well, therefore, that means that the shliach himself has to say the other one is not counting for this purpose. If we have in the Gemara is going to explain further on that I'm Tesai Nomad Bayes. Another way of understanding it is we are talking about that both of them are shluchim. But so then you can say what's the problem in that case? Still, though, the problem is. Since only one of them is saying the funny nechdam and not the funny nechdam, then it's very similar to kiyum shtaris. It's too similar to certifying other kinds of shtaris, where in fact we said that in that sugya earlier about Rabba and Rava, Rava had said over there that since regular kiyum shtaris requires only one aid, and here also regular kiyum shtaris requires two aidim, here the chachamim are allowing one person to say b'fanenechtem, and we want to make it very different than kiyum shtaris, so people don't think it's just the same kind of thing. So therefore, here it becomes very much like regular kiyum shtaris. So even if both of them are shluchim, you still have to have that both of them are saying b'fanenechtem and b'fanenechtem. What about shnayim omer b'fanenu nechtem ve'echad omer b'fanenechtem? If both of them say it was written in our presence, and then a third one says that b'fani nechdam, so neither of the first two has said b'fani nechdam, only the third one is saying that, puzzle, so then it would also be puzzle. Rabbi Yehuda machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says in that case it's kosher, because since after all we need edus on the writing. So now already it's not like regular kiyum shtaris. Regular kiyum shtaris, we only look at the signatures. We don't care. We don't look at the actual shtar itself to validate it, because all we're doing in kiyum shtaris is to validate the signatures. Well, the same thing over here. Rabbi Yehuda is saying you anyway need edus on the writing. Because you have that, so therefore the fact that you only have one saying b'fani nechdam, a third person saying b'fani nechdam, Rabbi Yehuda says not a problem. Later on in the Gemara, we're going to explain the details of their machlokes. Another case, echad omer b'fani nechdav, or shnayim omer b'fani nechdam, if one of them says it was written in our presence, in my presence, and then two others say it was signed in our presence, kosher, then it'll be kosher. And again, the Gemara will end up explaining why that is. So those are the various cases. So now getting into the Gemara. The idea is the idea boils down to basically that the whole thing, again, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, only part of the get you have when we talk about the get over here, you have two different parts. Called the Tofes and the Todef. We mentioned them earlier in the first parak, so we're going to have them again throughout the Masechta. The Todef is the heart of the get itself. The things that are different from one get to another, the names of the husband and wife, and things like that, and also the actual words Hareyat Muteres L'Chadam, which is the main formula of the get. Those are all called the Todef. those are the parts that have to be written midaraisa. Then you have the parts that only have to be written only midrabanan. You have the rest of the boilerplate text of the get. That's called toifas. So since basically only the toref needs to be written lishma, then therefore that's what the Mishnah is saying at the end, that if you have two people saying that one says b'fan in niftav, which is good enough to testify on that, and then you have two say b'fan in nechtam, then that would be good enough. But again, the Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin will explain that in more detail. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, why do we even need this first part of the Mishnah at all? That he starts by saying that about b'fan in nechtav or b'fan in nechtam, that he has to be able to say both of them. We already have it at the beginning of the Masechta. Maybe get he has to make that declaration. And if he doesn't, then implicitly the get is possible. So why does our Mishnah have to be saying where he says one and not the other that it's also possible? Isn't that obvious? And the answer is no. If you only had that Mishnah at the beginning, you would think, fine, maybe it means he's required to do it. The E by Omar, but even if he didn't say it kosher, then b'dievid would be kosher. Kamash Malan, therefore our Mishnah is telling us that it doesn't just mean he's supposed to say it, means he has to say it, and without saying it, it will in fact be possible. The Ritva in particular explains that according to Rava, that the whole purpose is only to make it different than Kiyum Shtaris. So therefore, you would have thought it's only a chumrah. So therefore, we need it. And according to Rabba, the point is again to say that we should need it. Lishma to be considered. Yes, lishma is one of the things in the get that's daraisa. But the chashash, the concern that they may not be familiar with lishma, is maybe only a chashash rochik. It's an unlikely thing. So therefore, according to both of them, the Mishnah has to tell us that nevertheless, that's how it is. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah that if he says b'fanin nichtav chetzir, b'fanin nechtim kuloi, if he says half of it was written in my presence and all of it was signed, meaning both edim signed in my presence, posel, we say it's also posel because he's not saying edus on the whole get. Well, the question is, hey chetzir, which half is he saying was written in his presence and was saying that's not good enough? Ilema chetzir rishon, do we mean the first half of the get? And the first half of the get is what contains the toref, the essential formulas of the get. That's where you would have the names of the husband and the wife and other such details like that. So what's the problem? V'ha'amar Rabbi Lazar, didn't Rabbi Lazar say, we learned in the previous parak, afilu like kosabay l'shita achas l'shma, even if he only wrote one line of the get l'shma shuvein etzarech, then he doesn't need and only that part is necessary to be lishma min atorah, because again that's the part that contains their names and whatever the names the date also hareat mataras l'chol adam. Anyway, so that would be good enough. The fact that the toifas, that the rest of the standard text is not lishma, doesn't matter, at least on a daraisa level, and therefore the chachamim aren't going to pass over get just because he didn't say b'fon a nichtav on it. So not shuven itzorach doesn't mean the rest of it doesn't have to be written lishma, but it means the aid doesn't have to be there to watch that the rest of it was written lishma. So Ravashi says, right, what we mean in the Mishnah is he says that he was only there for the last half of it, and the last half of it is the toifas. So therefore you have an issue over here that he didn't watch the Torah being written lishma, and therefore that's a problem, because that part has to be written lishma daraisa, and again therefore you have the problem, maybe it wasn't done lishma because these people in Medina Sayyam don't know that, and therefore you need them to be able to certify otherwise. Which actually Tosfos earlier in the Masechta points out that works out. So that would work very nicely according to Rabba's explanation, that the reason is you need to know that it was written lishma. So then, of course, if he just doesn't testify about the appropriate part, then no good. But Rava says that it's basically a matter of kiyum shtaris, and just you want to make it different than regular kiyum shtaris, where usually you need two edim. Here you only need one. Well, then, according to Rava, what does it matter, toifas or toifas? So Tosfos earlier in the Masechta on Daf Gimel says that according to Rava, if you were only If you were to only be testifying about the last part of the get, then it would then people would think it's still no different than regular kiyum shtaris. Only when you're testifying about the first half and saying b'fanei nichtav, then and meaning, in other words, that it also includes that it was so when you're saying on the first half, which is the teref, which is the essential part of the get, then it shows it's different than regular kiyum shtaris. The Pnei Yeshua doesn't like that explanation. He says it's a big doichak to understand like that. So he says that he explains that takona b'fanei nechtam is that basically the chachamim made it that the get is not going to be kosher unless it's written in front of the shliach. And what part of it has to be written in front of the shliach? The part that's essential to it being kosher, namely the Torah. So once the Chachamim said the Shliach has to be there, then the main part of the get has to be done before him. That's how the Pnei Yeshua learns. Okay. So that's what we mean in the Mishnah. When he says that half of it was written in my presence, we mean that only the half, the Tofes, which is the boilerplate text, was written in his presence, not the Todef, the part that contains the names of the husband and the wife and the date. Wasn't written in his presence, and therefore he's not saying b'fanei nechtav properly. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, b'fanei nechtav kolo b'fanei nechtav chetzi apostle. If he says the whole thing was written in my presence, but only half of it was signed, in other words, that only one aid signed in my presence. So now let's talk more about that. Omer of Chista, v'afilu shnayim idim achsimis yad sheni. Now, even if you were to have two other aidim who come and testify about the signature of the second aid. In other words, Rashi says, Rav Chista is not explaining the Mishnah. Rav Chista is adding his own svara and saying, this case that we're talking about in the Mishnah, where the Shliach himself says that only one of the Edim signed in my presence, even if you were to get two other Edim to validate the second signature, nevertheless, Rav Chista is saying it would still be possible. My timer, why is that? Oy kula b'kiyum get, because you have to have either the entire get is validated by kiyum, by regular kiyum shtaris, meaning that you have two edim recognizing each of the signatures, oy kula b'takonis chachamim, or the whole thing has to be based on the takonis chachamim, which is that if he said that if this one shliach himself says b'fanei nechtam, then we agree, then we believe him as if he was two edim. But like to mix and match, to have that one signature was validated by the shliach, and the other by the one shliach, and the other one is validated by two edim, that no good. So Rav Chista is saying it wouldn't work. Tosfos points out two things over here. First of all, in the first parak, we had a case where a get was being brought from one city to another in Bavel, and Rav Chista himself had said that we discussed in the Gemara over there that he may hold that because that the reason, the underlying reason for b'fanei nechtam is Rabba's reason that because they're not b'kiyum l'shma, and in the particular place where they were bringing it from Aktisfa, and they're not necessarily b'nei Torah, and they don't know this, well, then here also we're talking about when they certify the signature would mean not just that we recognize that this aid's genuine signature, but that they're testifying that he actually signed it l'shma. And still, Rav Chista is saying it's not good enough because it has to be all one or all the other. Tosfos also adds that if the shliach knows that he has to certify both signatures and say that they were done l'shma, then he's going to be more careful to pay attention to that. But if he's only doing one, then Rav Chista figures he's not going to be careful enough to do that. But maskif lo Rava. But Rava says challenges that and says, how can you say mi ikamidi di ilo omachad kosher? How could you have a case where if one of them had said that if the shliach himself had said I recognize both signatures, then it would be kosher. And we learned actually earlier, Rashi refers to the Gemara previously on Daf Gimel that said that if he says I know that these are the signatures and that they're written l'shman, then even if he doesn't actually say the words b'fanei nechtam, then it's still kosher. So if he were to say I know that these signatures are valid. And this is Rava following his own shita earlier, who said that the thing is, we don't want it to be similar to Kiyum Shtaris. But nevertheless, if he still says, if he says, I recognize the signatures, then that would be the equivalent of saying Fani Nechtam. So how do you have that if he were to say it's kosher, hashta de'ika trei posel, and now you're going to tell me that because there are two other Edim coming and saying that it's these people's signatures, then therefore would be posel? What's the logic? So in other words, Tosfos says again, Rav Chista would take the view that maybe the shliach himself is not being so medayik, and Rava says, nevertheless, that's not an issue. The shliach is going to be medayik no matter what. Ela Omar Rava. So Rava says, no, I disagree with Rav Chista. Afilo huva achamas meibdin meidin achosimas yad sheni posel. Rather, what it would be is, even if the shliach plus one other person who is not the shliach are testifying about the second signature posel, then the get would be posel. So now, in other words, it's true that if only the shliach himself were to say it would be kosher, but now by adding another person, it becomes posel, because now my timer, why should it be posel? Because again, the problem is that people would think that it's similar to regular kiyum shtaris that you have by other shtaris. Normally you have to have two edim to do kiyum shtaris to validate the signatures. But here, after all, you can't have, imagine, for example, you have Reuven and Shimon are signed on a shtar. What are you going to have? So now suppose one of the ways of validating the signatures is that Reuven and Shimon themselves come to Beis Din and testify that these are in fact those signatures. But let's consider what would happen. Suppose that Reuven died. Now, if Shimon were to come to Beis Din and say, I can validate my signature, I recognize that, and I can also tell you based in that it's that this is Reuven's signature, and I have somebody else with me who can back me up as well and say that this is Reuven's signature. On the face of it, you would think it would be good, but the problem is it's actually not. And Rashi refers to a Gemara in Ksubas that says, because otherwise, in effect, what you have is three quarters of the shtar, and Gemara is going to mention it over here also, three quarters of the shtar, and the money that's in it is depending on one aid. Because what are you having over here? Shimon himself is validating his own signature, that's half the shtar, and then he's also joining with somebody else to validate Reuven's signature, so it comes out that three quarters of the shtar depends on him, and you can't do that. So in a similar vein over here, so v'kanofik nam nachi river de mamona, v'kuma dechad sada, everything minus one quarter of the money, meaning three quarters of the money, is being based on one aid, and you can't do that. So Rava is saying, in our case over here, if two aidim were, so now again, if the shliach were to come and say, I can testify on Reuven's signature, and then two other aidim would come and say, we can testify on Shimon's signature, then Rava says, unlike Rav Chista, that would be kosher. We don't care about the fact that it's half one and half the other. But if you only have Reuven is saying, if the shliach says, I can testify that Reuven signed Lishma, and then one other aide comes and says that I can testify what you have is, in other words, if the shliach says, I can testify on Reuven's signature that it was done Lishma, and then I, together with another aide, can come and testify that Shimon's signature is good, then Rav is saying that would be no good, because then people are going to think the same thing would work by regular kiyum shtaris. In other words, because again, Rav is saying the whole reason why we need b'fanin nechtem is it shouldn't be similar to other kiyum shtaris, and here you're going to do something that people are going to think is actually valid by other kiyum shtaris. But maskif lo Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi still challenges what Rav is saying. How do you have a case where if the shliach were to say the entire statement, if he were to say b'fanin nechtem and b'fanin nechtem, kosher, then it would be kosher, because after all, that's the takana of the chachamim. And now you're telling me that one person joins with him to validate the other posel, then it's posel, because that's the case Rava is talking about, where the shliach says, where the shliach is saying that that if the shliach and that if the shliach says I can testify that Reuven's signature was done lishma, and I together with somebody else can testify about Shimon's, what's the logic that we should say that's possible? Rava is saying because you might think that you could do that by other kiyum shtaris. The fact is though, the chachamim allowed him to say it all by himself. B'fanin nechdem. How can it be worse because you have a second person with him? Ela, Amar Rav Ashi said no. Rav Ashi said in that case also the get would be kosher. Afilo Oimer Anihu Eid Sheni Posel. Rather, what it is even if the shliach says the first one signed in my presence and I was actually the second aid. So now, usually an aid is allowed to be Mekayim his own signature. That's one of the valid ways of Kiyum Shtaris. But here, posel. In this case, it would be posel. My time and here you have the logic that we said before. Here you have that either the entire get has to be validated by b'fanin nechtam, or either it has to be all validated with regular kiyum, two edim who each say we recognize the signatures, or both, or all the takonis chachamim of b'fanin nechta. So again, in other words, so here the problem is when he says I'm the second aid, he's not. So instead of saying b'fanin nechtam, actually what he's doing is in effect he's doing two different edus. He's doing an edus about the get itself, and then separately he's doing an edus about his signature. And we can't combine those two things together. So therefore we don't have it valid. So Rashi explains in some detail over here that. They're all not really coming to explain the Mishnah. They're all coming to say dinim that they're being mechadish based on the Mishnah. But still, when we had in the Mishnah, when we had the case where he says b'fanin nechtam and only one of them was signed and b'fanin nechtam and only one of them was signed was nechtam b'fan and once and he says b'fanin nechtam he says b'fanin nichtav kuloi or b'fanin nechtam chetzia. Then he said it's possible. So now we still need to understand what the chiddush of the Mishnah is. So Rashi says therefore what we have to say is either Rava or Rav Ashi's din. We wouldn't accept Rav Chista's din, either Rava's or Rav Ashi's din. In other words, you can't learn Rav Chista's din from the Mishnah because the Mishnah itself is not phrasing it in a way that would imply that chiddush. So maybe let's take a minute to learn the Rashi over here, the long Rashi beginning Ella. So Ella al kochach lav al kochach Mishnah yaseira denoka rabusa osalashminan. So rather you would say that. That belongs to later in the sugya. So never mind. Okay. So never mind that. We'll get to that point soon. So Rav Ashi is saying, leaving aside the Mishnah itself talking about Or Chidushim, if he were to say I'm the second aid, then you have a problem because then you have so Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi. The problem is that now he's being negeya be'edusa. It's true, of course, he doesn't have any particular thing that he's gaining from that edus because it's a get. It's not like dinim mamonis. Nevertheless, once he's signed on it, then already he doesn't have the full nemonis to be able to say just that this is to be able to say b'fanin nechtam and to validate his signature. And then the Ran brings a different point that we just said, which is that in effect, you have two different edus in over here that are unrelated. One way is testifying about the get itself being one of the edim that were signed on it, and the other one way is testifying that it was done, that it was properly written, b'fanin nechtam, and you can't combine those two things. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan. Well, let's look at our Mishnah and see whether it fits with any of these opinions. The Mishnah had said, b'fanin nechtam chetzi, that if the whole get, if he says the whole get was written in my presence and only half of it was signed in my presence, only one aid, then we said posel. So we have to ask, well, what does the Mishnah mean that he's saying half of it, that one aid signed in my presence? What's the story with the second aid? Do you mean that there's actually nobody even saying that that aide had signed, that that it's his signature and that it's Lashma? Well, of course, Hashta, after all, if you have, if the next Mishnah, if the next part of the Mishnah continues, Echad Omer B'fanei Nichtav, Echad Omer B'fanei Nechtam, where one says B'fanei Nichtav, the other one of the two Shluchim says B'fanei Nechtam, Dahaim Kamasid HaKol HaKsiva, Vahai Kamasid HaKol HaKsima, one is testifying about the whole writing of the get, that it was done Lashma, and the other one, and the other one is testifying about all the signatures that they were done Lashma, and that these are in fact those signatures, and still posel, and still we're saying the get is posel because they have to both, because one has to say b'fanei nechtam. That's even boyer. Would you have to tell us that if they can only validate one aid signature that should be posel, there'd be no chiddush in that? So in other words, again, you know, you could be talking, about that, that he's saying that, so obviously that's not the chiddush of the Mishnah. Ella, obviously the chiddush of the Mishnah must be oikid rabba, oikid rabashi, must be either according to rabba or either according to rabba, that we're talking about the shliach joins together with somebody else to validate the second signature, oikid rabashi, or according to rabashi, where the shliach himself says, I'm the second aid. Either way, evidently the Mishnah would be telling us that Rav Chista's din does not apply. Now it's true, Rav Chista had not said his din on the Mishnah, but nevertheless, the wording of the Mishnah seems to imply not like Rav Chista, because otherwise the Mishnah should have said that beferish. So here you have the long Rashi Ella. So we won't learn him inside actually, because we're a little short on time. But the point is therefore that. In other words, this is an example of tafasta merubah loy tafasta. If you're going to learn from the Mishnah a bigger chiddush or a smaller chiddush, you can't necessarily prove that you can learn a bigger chiddush from the Mishnah. If you want to learn it only because it's Mishnah Yaseira, only because it's extra words that the Mishnah didn't have to say, then you can't learn from it a big chiddush like Rav Chista's. That even though you have two full adim certifying the second signature, that should be possible. If you're only learning it from the fact that the Mishnah is saying extra words, and the Mishnah is therefore telling us some chiddush, you can't learn such a big chiddush. If it was going to say that, it should have said befeirush that even Rav Chista din, that even if you have the shliach certifies only one signature and two other people come and certify the second, that it would still be possible. The Mishnah should have said that. If it doesn't say that, then you can't infer that from the Mishnah. The most you can infer is either Rava's or Rav Ashi's din. So the Gemara answers, Omalach Rav Chista. So Rav Chista can answer, no, the Mishnah is not a contradiction to me. The Litai Meir, new and according to your own Svara, that the purpose of the Mishnah is to tell us some kind of Chiddush. Then you would ask, then why would the Mishnah have to be telling us the case of B'fani Nichtav and not B'fani Nechtam? On the face of it, again, the Mishnah goes on to say that even if he says that half of it was signed in my presence, it's still possible. How much more so if there's no aegis on the signatures at all? So obviously, Ella loizu afzu katani. Obviously, the Mishnah is written in one of these ways, in the style, as one of these Mishnayos that's written in the style of loizu afzu. Not only this, but even this. So in other words, the Mishnah, each part of the Mishnah is given a chiddush over the previous part. But the earlier parts themselves don't have to have a chiddush. Hachanami loizu afzu katani, the same way over here. So the Mishnah starts by saying not only if there's no edim at all on the signatures, it's possible. Even if you have edus on one signature, it's possible. And hachanami, you could say loizu afzu katani. So the Mishnah would be implying that not only if there's edus on only one signature, it's possible. Even if there's edus on the other signature as well, but it's only because one of them is saying b'fanei nechtam and the other one is saying b'fanei nechtam, it still doesn't help. But therefore, the Mishnah may not necessarily be excluding Rav Chista's case, where you do actually have two edim on the second signature, and still Rav Chista would be saying that it's no good. You can't necessarily infer from the Mishnah that it would have been good. So therefore, Rav Chista says the Mishnah is not a contradiction to me. Okay. So now we mentioned the point before So we mentioned the point before that in Rav Chista's din, in Rav Ashi's din, we said that you can't mix and match. You either have the get is validated according to Takanas Chachamim by the shliach saying b'fana nichta b'fana nechtam, or that's validated in the regular way of kiyum shtaris by having two edim come and testify on each signature. And we said before. That we said before, you also can't have, Rava had pointed out, you can't have that one aide comes and says, this is my signature, and also this is the other guy's signature, and somebody else is coming and also saying this is the other guy's signature, because then it comes out that three quarters of the shtar depends on the one aide, and you can't do that. So that we have an example over there where you can't mix and match, you can't take half of one and half of the other. So now the Gemara brings another example of that, as far as the halachas of, as far as Hilchos Shabbos. Now we know that if an area is surrounded by a wall, at least 10 tefachim tall, then it's a reshusa, and it's above a certain minimum size, then it's a reshusa yachid. We know that also there doesn't need to be a wall. There can also be an embankment, meaning that the area itself is higher than the ground surrounding it. We have the concept that we say good asik. We consider as though the sides of that embankment were pulled up to form walls around it. And therefore that area, so you have, let's say, for example, a big rock, which is at least 10 tefachim tall, and at least 4x4, and at least 4x4 tefachim in size, then it would be considered a reshus yachid. So now, on the other hand, Rav Omer Rav Chista, gidud chamisha u'mechitza chamisha ein metzdarfin. If you have five tefachim of embankment, Rashi defines that gidud over here means actually a hole in the ground. If you have a choritz, if you have a crevice in the ground, which is five tefachim deep. So in other words, let's say you have an area, you have a chotzo, let's say that's surrounded by a moat, by a choritz like that, five tefachim deep all around. And then, mechitza chamisha, then on top of that moat, he built a mechitza, five tefachim tall, ein mitzdarfin, that wouldn't combine together and make the place a reshus yachin. So Rashi explains, in other words, forget about the chotzer that's surrounding the area inside the ditch itself wouldn't be considered a reshus yachid. We wouldn't say, well, now it's surrounded by 10 tefachim, you have 5 tefachim of ground and another 5 tefachim of wall, and therefore it should count as a reshus yachid. We don't say that. The whole thing does not become a reshus yachid. My time. Because it has to be either all mechitza above ground or all gidud below ground. You can't match them. So the same, this is similar to what Rav Chista was saying before about that you can't have b'fanin nechtam on one signature and edim on the other signature. So the same way over here, he would say. Tosfos discusses that maybe not necessarily, maybe actually the inside of the ditch itself would actually be considered a reshus yachid in this case, because the fact is, though, even according to Rav Chista, because the fact is there are 10 tefachim around it. Rather, Tosfos says, first of all, you can have a case where there are two chatzeres, one on higher ground than the other. And we mean as far as, suppose you want to make an eruv between the two chatzeres. So if you have five tefachim difference in height between the two chatzeres, and then on the edge over there, you built a five tefach mechitza, then that wouldn't be enough to make it considered that they're considered separate. They could still join together in one eruv. Tosfos also mentions another example would be that you have a mound of a pile of dirt and a shusarabim, five tefachim tall, and you would add a five tefach tall fence around it, that wouldn't be enough to make that area a shusar yachin. So the point is, Rav Chista is saying that you can't combine these two things. On the other hand, Dorash Marema, but Marema Darshin, no, Gidud Chamisho, Mechitza Chamisho Mitztarvin, that no, they could combine the Hilchsa Mitztarvin. The halacha is they would combine. So in the case, for example, of inside the ditch itself, it would in fact be considered now a Rishus HaYachid because it's got 10 tefachim around it. In the case that Tosfos is bringing the two chatzeres, one on higher ground than the other, the Gidur and the Mechitza would combine together. So now those two chatzeres can't join with an Eruv chatzeres unless they have a doorway between them. And in the case of the mound of dirt in Rosh Hashanah, also we would say that it would in fact count as a Rosh Hashanah Yachid now that you have full 10 Tefachim. So there you have another example where Rav Chisda says you can't mix and match, you can't combine from two different dinim, but others disagree. So the same way as we had before by the get, similarly with this. So now we'll continue tomorrow with a similar question as far as Netilas Yadayim. That will be a longer discussion, so we'll learn that one tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Okay.